Okay, if you want to get your Bibles and turn to Daniel chapter 6, we're pretty much going to park in Daniel chapter 6 tonight. There is no PowerPoint, so don't get excited about there being any PowerPoint slides tonight. There will not be any for our study tonight. But as you turn to Daniel chapter 6, you are turning to the second best story in all of the Bible. What are we going to read about in Daniel chapter 6? Well, we're going to read about Daniel, so that's a good guess to begin with, right? We're going to read about Daniel, and what particularly about Daniel in Daniel chapter 6? Daniel in the lion's den. Is that a pretty good story? Second best one in all the Bible, if you're counting. You know, if you rank them, it's the second best one in all of the Bible. You know what the best one is? It's David. And Goliath. Hello? That's obvious, people. I mean, what's the deal here? That's just so blatantly, you know, staring you in the face. It was staring you in the face, and you couldn't even get it. Just kidding. But we're going to the second best. And maybe if your name is Daniel, you might think it's the first best story. But we'll let you into heaven too. But it's interesting when you turn to the book of Daniel. Here's one of the exciting books of the Bible to get into, not just for the stories, but then to get to the second half of it and look at some of the prophecies that Daniel made. Those are exciting. But when you read about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, is that not one of the favorite stories to teach kids about? I mean, anytime you can throw kids into a fiery furnace, I mean, there is something about that that just brings some satisfaction, but one of the best stories to think about those young men and the faith that they had. You read in Daniel chapter 1 about the determination that they had purposed in their hearts, that they were not going to go against their conscience. But you turn to this book about Daniel. And, you know, we looked at Samson last night. And Samson's one of those characters, when you read in the Bible, that you see both sides of the man, right? You see both sides of the coin. You see the good and the bad. You see the pretty and the ugly. You see that with Samson. But you see that with, maybe most, you see that with a lot of Bible characters, don't you? You have David, a man after God's own heart. Is everything that we read in the Bible about David just beautiful, flowery, nothing bad? It was everything. David was just perfect and great in everything that he did. No. So we read not just his strengths, but we read about some weaknesses and some failures too. What about Moses, described as the meekest man on the earth? The great prophet of God, great deliverer of God, for God's people out of Egyptian bondage. Do we read?
He had it up to here at one point.
He had it up to here, Jerry says, at one point. And if you were the leader of the complainites, you'd have it up to here too. Do we read anything about Moses that wasn't so good? Anything that he did that was not the best of... Oh, yeah, something called murder. So you read Bible characters and all of a sudden there's these great heroes of the Bible. Read about Elijah, the great prophet. Do we read about any weaknesses or any failures on his part? You know, here's a man taken up to heaven in a whirlwind, but what do we see some not so good things even in his life. I say all of that to say you come to Daniel. When you read about Daniel, what do you read? Does God show us both sides of this man? Do we see anything negative? Do we see anything bad? Do we see any weaknesses? Do we see any failures in this man? That's an interesting thing about Daniel. In fact, when Ezekiel, when he's prophesying, he even speaks about Daniel and lauds how great of a man that he was. They were contemporaries, by the way. Ezekiel and Daniel were were uh, when you say contemporaries, they were prophets at the about the same time there in Babylonian captivity. But when you come and you study about Daniel, here's a man that, well, most of what we read about him is, well, all of what we read about him is very good and very positive. And so we turn and we look at this man who had a strong faith and a strong trust in God, even in the face of opposition. And so what I want us to do tonight is just kind of park ourselves in Daniel chapter 6. And I want us to, we're gonna hopefully be able to just look at every verse in this chapter. And, you know, here's the thing about teaching about Daniel in the lion's den. It's really easy to teach. It's also really hard to teach. You know this story. I'm not going to tell you anything tonight that you don't know. Sorry. I'm not going to tell you anything tonight you haven't heard already. Why? Because here's one of the best stories in the Bible. You know it. Some of you know it better than I do. And so we're going to come to this passage, but it's one of the most exciting stories to teach children. To think about, can we have the same kind of faith that Daniel had? Can we have the same kind of trust that Daniel had? So when you come to Daniel chapter 6, let's put this in its context. Put it in its context. You're reading about Daniel. Where is Daniel in this context? Where is he? He is in Babylonian captivity. Sort of. He is in Babylonian captivity. Daniel was born somewhere around the year 620 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar comes and surrounds, besieges the city of Jerusalem, apparently where Daniel was born and raised in his early years. And somewhere around 605, 606 B.C., Nebuchadnezzar, in one of his waves, in that first wave of captives that he takes away from Jerusalem and takes them back to Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar is the king of Babylon, and that first wave of captives that he takes back to Babylon, Daniel is one of them. He's a teenager, 15, 16 years of age, taken from his home to a foreign land. What do you think that does to him? What do you think that does to his faith? We don't know anything about Daniel's parents. We don't know their names. We don't know what they did for a living. But let me ask you something. When we read about Daniel, is it possible we might know something about his parents? They're never named, they're never mentioned, but what? Do we know something about them? Here is a boy taken from his home when he is a teenager. Does he have a level of faith that sustains him for the rest of his life in a foreign land, not on vacation? Some of you wouldn't mind going to a foreign land. And you know, some people look at missionaries. Oh, they're in a foreign land on vacation. Wrong. Some people may, but that's Daniel's not on vacation. He's in a foreign land where he's going to spend the rest of his life, and he goes there as a teenager, somewhere around the year 605, 606 BC. Now, what's interesting about Daniel is he sees Babylon from that point all the way to the end of Babylon as a major world empire. And that's what Daniel chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4, and chapter 5 is about. It's about Daniel dealing with Babylonian kings. Two Babylonian kings he deals with in these chapters. Who are they? Nebuchadnezzar and his son, not as well known, I guess not, Belshazzar in chapter 5. But when you get to the end of chapter 5, notice what happens at the end of chapter 5. You remember what transpired during this feast that Belshazzar was having. Can you imagine being there and seeing the writing on the wall? Do you suppose they thought that maybe they had a little too much to drink? Something's going on here. We're seeing some funny things here. Maybe we should have stopped a few drinks ago. But they weren't seeing things. It was real, but they didn't understand it. It wasn't in English. So you back up, and what does Daniel come? Daniel comes at the end of chapter 5. Verse 24 says, "The fingers of the hand were sent from him," and this is the writing that was written. Verse 25, this is the inscription that was written. "Mene, Mene, Tekel Upharsin." What does that mean? Daniel says, here is the interpretation of each word. Mene, what does it mean? God has numbered your kingdom. He's numbered it, and now what? He's put an end to it. It's almost as if God is counting up and he got to the end, or maybe it was God was counting backwards. And he got to 3, 2, 1, 0. God's numbered your days. He's numbered your kingdom. He's finished it. He's done counting. Tekel, verse 27. "You have been weighed in the balances. And when you've been weighed, what's been found? You have been found insufficient. You have been found wanting." Verse 28, "Your kingdom has been divided." Who is he saying this to? Who is Daniel saying this to? The king of Babylon. He is saying to the king of Babylon, your kingdom has been numbered and it's finished. You've been weighed in the balances. You've been found lacking, wanting, insufficient. You're no good. Verse 28, "Your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and Persians." What does that indicate? Do you remember when Daniel interpreted Belshazzar's father's dream in Daniel chapter 2? Where Nebuchadnezzar saw the great image, and Nebuchadnezzar calls together all of his magicians and all of his sorcerers. He calls everybody together in Daniel chapter 2, and he says, what does he want them to tell him? Tell me what I dreamt and the meaning of it. What was their reaction? You're crazy. Nobody can do that. You know, you're expecting something that is impossible to be done. Nobody can tell you what you dream. You tell us what you dream, we'll make up something about what it means and it'll sound really good. But there's no way we can tell you what you dreamed. Daniel comes along, tells him exactly what he dreamed, tells him the interpretation of it. What was it? You, O king, are the head of gold. But there was going to come a kingdom after him. Who's that? Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar, here's these four successive world empires, and now Daniel is seeing this played out before his very eyes. Nebuchadnezzar is gone. Here's Belshazzar, the king of Babylon, and he says to Belshazzar, your kingdom is finished. And now it's been divided, and it's being given to the Medes and the Persians. What is the king's reaction? Does he kill Daniel? So you say, away with you. I don't want to hear your junk. Don't bring that news into me. This is amazing in verse 29. The king gave the command. They clothed Daniel with purple, put a chain of gold around his neck, made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. Daniel saw Babylon at its height, and now he sees Babylon when it falls. Go back to chapter 2. I know I said we were going to park in chapter 6, but you know, just put it in reverse for a second. Go back to chapter 2. You remember when Daniel interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dream for him? And at the end of chapter 2, verse 46, then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face, prostrate before Daniel, commanded, same word that was used over in Daniel chapter 5, commanded that they should present an offering and incense to Daniel. The king answered Daniel and said, truly your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret. It's interesting. He doesn't say he's my God. He just says he's your God. But then he says in verse 48, the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. Also, Daniel petitioned the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon, but Daniel sat in the gate of the king. So Daniel interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and what does Nebuchadnezzar do? Promotes him. Puts him over as he makes him the chief administrator in the kingdom. Now, he tells his son, Belshazzar, tells him what's going to happen to his kingdom. And what does this king do in chapter 5, verse 29? Makes him the third ruler in the kingdom. What does that say about Daniel? What? He is highly thought of by some highly ranked people. They make him ruler. Now, wait a minute. This is Babylon. What's Daniel's background? He's a Jew. He's being brought into this foreign land. But you remember what Nebuchadnezzar did in Daniel chapter 1? He wanted the best of those captives that were being brought in. He wanted to train them. He wanted to give them opportunities to lead. Now here's Daniel. Now, when you get to Daniel chapter 5 and chapter 6, let's read the last two verses and then I'll say this. Daniel chapter 5, verse 30. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius the Mede, remember what he said in verse 28, your kingdom's going to be given to the Medes and the Persians. And Darius the Mede, what word do you have? What's the verb that you have?
Received
the kingdom. Received the kingdom? Why doesn't it say that he conquered it? Why doesn't it say that he overcame? What does it mean that he received it? Like it was a gift. God gave it to him? Back up, put it in reverse again, but we're not going as far. Go to chapter 4. Go to Daniel chapter 4. We'll just look at one verse. Look at verse 25. This is a couple times in the chapter, but we'll just look at this one verse. Daniel chapter 4, verse 25. They shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. This is Daniel talking to Nebuchadnezzar. They shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you till you know that. And here's what I want us to see at the end of Daniel 4, 25. Till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomever he chooses. What does chapter 5 and verse 30 and 31 say about Darius? He received the king. Well, who did he receive it from? God is the Most High. He's the one who rules. And here, when he received, now you think the Babylonians have been conquered. Now it's the next major world dominating force, or the Medes and the Persians, and it's being given to Darius. He receives it. Now back to chapter 5, verse 31. I got sidetracked on that word for a second. Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Interesting that it tells us how old he was. Now let's do some math, though, and figure out, how old was Daniel? Babylon falls to the Medes and the Persians in 539 B.C. 539 B.C. I know numbers maybe are not so good for us, and especially when you're working backwards because it's B.C. But if Daniel was taken captive as a teenager, 605, 606 B.C., he sees the height of Babylon down to the fall of Babylon in 539 B.C. If he was born, perhaps somewhere around 620 B.C., and now it's the fall of Babylon in 539 B.C., help me with the math. How old is Daniel? He is 80, 81, 82 years old. Go back and think about some of the pictures you've seen of Daniel in the lion's den, right? What do those pictures show? Do they show an old man? Not usually. Some might, but that is not the... Oops, did I say 80 was old? No, Just subtract that. I didn't say, okay. But do you picture an 80-year-old man?
Seasoned.
Do you picture an 80-year-old man in the lion's den? Picture that with him being thrown into the lion's den. Thank you very much. You can throw my hip out. You know, we talked about throwing your hip out earlier. You know, be careful with the old man. There, I said it again. Be careful with the old man putting him down in the lion's den. But we've got to put this in the context. That's what's happening. So now, in Daniel 6, we would say Daniel is in Babylonian captivity, except he's not in Babylonian captivity. He's now under the rule of the Medes and the Persians. And yet, the decree of Cyrus that we read about in the first couple verses of the book of Ezra is not going to happen for another 3 years. Daniel is a prophet of God in Babylon for nearly the entire time that they're there. That's an amazing thought to think about God's prophet being there. If you were in Babylonian captivity for 70 years, would your faith have wavered a bit? Would your trust in God, would you have said, God, seriously? How long are you going to keep us here? How long, God, what? Would you have had a mindset that says, God, why me? What did I ever do to you? God, I was just a teenage boy. What have I done to deserve this? Have we ever said some of those statements that I just said? Have we ever said those statements to God? Why? Why me? What have I ever done to deserve this? Here's Daniel. Spends his whole life.
That's all he knew, really.
That's all that he knew, was being there in a foreign land. So did he get over there and then just conform himself to it then? So, you know, if this is where I'm going to be, I might as well fit in. I might as well just become a part of this land. I'm never going to go back home. I'll never be back there. So I'll just blend in with every... Is that what he did? This man sticks out like a sore thumb. And yet, what do these kings keep doing with him? Promoting him to positions of authority. Mickey? Right. Right. Absolutely. Mickey was reading from Daniel chapter 1, verses 8 and 9, where the Bible says that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. And so, because he made a choice, in the very next verse, it talks about how God was going to use him and God blessed him in what he was doing. So, here we are. We're finally in Daniel 6, where I said we were going to stay for the night. Here is a man who trusted in God with an unwavering trust, even in the face of going to the lion's den. Now, I don't know that any of us are ever going to be faced with a literal lion's den. Maybe we will, I don't know. But in a figurative way, we're all going to have a lion's den that we're going to face, if we haven't already. Where we're going to be faced with something in our lives that we've got to make a decision. How strong is my faith in God? How determined am I to stand in my faith in God? How determined am I to trust in God? Here was a man who was living in a nation that did not believe in Jehovah God. Is it possible you might one day live in a nation that does not believe in Jehovah God? He's living in that nation. But he did not conform himself to that. Here was a man living in a nation, living in a place where there was global pressure to give in, to not follow after your own faith. But remember what Nebuchadnezzar did in chapter 3? You're going to bow down to this image. And if you don't, you're being thrown into the fiery furnace. Is that pressure? That's a pressure cooker is what that is. That's pressure. Says, you're going to do this. So here's Daniel. And I tried to come up with some ways to describe Daniel, and not all of these work, but maybe you can help me as we go through here. But I think when you read these first several verses, you read about a man of character. Chapter 6, verse 1. It pleased Darius. Who's Darius? He is the king he's the king of this area of the Medes and the Persians that has come over and is ruling over this region. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom. And over these 120, he set three governors, of whom Daniel was one. How old is Daniel? I mean, at some point, he might just say, hey, look, you know, Darius, I'm retired. You know, I gave that up a while. Why don't you go find somebody younger? But he is chosen. Now, how would Darius even know about him? He comes to the throne. How do you even know about this foreigner, this Jew who's here in Babylon?
Heard the stories word of mouth.
Are these stories passed along? Does he come with some recommendations? What's interesting to me, and I don't know the reason for this, at least I didn't really spend time looking at it and trying to digest it, but you might look at it sometime, is it's interesting that two or three times in this, at least in this chapter alone, Daniel is referred to as this Daniel. You see it here in verse 3. And Daniel will even refer to himself. I don't know the why of it. I don't know that it's that significant, but it's just interesting to me, just looking at every word. Then this Daniel did what in verse 3? Distinguished himself. That's sort of like what chapter 1 and verse 8 says, that he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. Daniel is in this land, and instead of conforming himself, he set himself apart. He purposefully made a choice to distinguish himself above the other two governors and the 120 satraps. He says, I am going to be different. Isn't that what God calls all of us to do? Here's an 80-year-old man. Once you reach that age, do you just get on autopilot and just kind of get on cruise control and just say, all right, I'll just kind of cruise. What's this man doing? I am going to continue to distinguish myself from everyone else around me. Now, distinguish himself how? As we read through this chapter, it's obviously that he's distinguishing himself as one who trusted in God. Verse 3, then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps, comma, because. I know some translations may not have the word because here, but in the New King James, the word because is found four times in this chapter. And I think every single one of them is important to see. And so I'm going to make sure we point them out. I know some of you are going to get to your concordance and go find them ahead of time. And good luck to that. All right. But here's the first time. What was it that made Daniel different? Because an excellent spirit was in him. I don't believe there's any translation that has a capital S on that word spirit. This isn't talking about the Spirit of God being in him. Some translations don't even have the word spirit.
Extraordinary.
Have extraordinary. Does it say spirit?
Singular.
Spirit. There's another translation that doesn't have the word spirit. Can't remember what translation it is. Anyway, so the Bible says he distinguished himself because he had an excellent. What does that mean? He had an excellent spirit that was in him.
Confidence.
Yeah, a confidence perhaps.
Character.
Motivation. What did you say, Willie?
Character.
He's a man of character. Would he be described as a man with an excellent spirit in him if he was an honest man? Do you think there was anybody in the kingdom that was dishonest? Think there were any leaders who were dishonest? Here is a man who had an excellent spirit. Why? He's honest. He's a man of integrity. He's a man that can be trusted. How many leaders do you suppose Darius could trust? How many did he look at as men of distinguished integrity to say, this man is good to his word? Well, what does the rest of this verse say? He had an excellent spirit that was in him. That was one reason that Daniel was special. The king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. He was different. And the king thought, you know, if I needed anybody that I could trust to do anything, it would be Daniel. Now, let me ask you a question. Could that have gone to Daniel's head? Oh, look at me. Nebuchadnezzar promotes me. Yes, sir. You saw my talent, didn't you? Belshazzar, I told him his kingdom was doomed. And what did he do? He made me third. Boy, guys, you're seeing the talent, aren't you? And now here's the new guy on the scene. And what does he do? He wants to make me number one. Yes, sir. This is all would have been easy for him to go to his head. Easy for him to say, did it? Would it for one of us? Would it for any of us?
Most leaders have trouble with that.
Yeah, Jerry says most leaders have that kind of problem, have that kind of ego problem. And yet not for him. Why not? Because he had an excellent spirit in him. Dirk? Right. Right. So, as you look at the things that transpired, Dirk says, even with the previous kings and what God had done for him, it obviously helps to keep him humble, which it would when you see God working in your life in that way. But here, he does not allow prestige. He doesn't allow power. He doesn't allow the authority given. He doesn't allow it to detract him from who he is and what he's there to do. Mickey? We're getting to that. Don't jump too far ahead. We're only on verse 3. Don't get there. All right. So, what do you have in verse 4? What's the first word you have in verse 4? So, then. Here's a word of transition that says, Daniel was receiving great notoriety and attention from the king. And so, how did the other governors feel about that? Did they like that? Say, oh, look at Daniel. He is such a great... I want to be more like Daniel. Is that what they thought? Jealous is the word. What does the book of Proverbs say about envy and bones? What is envy to our bones? Rottenness. Do we see that with these guys? Is there a rottenness to the bones in their envy? The governors and the satraps in verse 4 sought to find these stinkers. They sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. We don't really have time, but let me. You might mark it if you're taking notes. You might mark Psalm 37. I just want to jump over here. You don't have to do it. I want to jump over here and read this verse from Psalm 37, verse 32. Psalm 37, verse 32. This said, "The wicked watches the righteous and seeks to slay him." Is that true? The wicked is watching the righteous. Why? He's trying to catch him. He's trying to slay him. He's trying to trip him up. What are they doing in Daniel 6 and verse 4? Exactly that. They sought... By the way, we won't have time to talk about this as we go through here, but there are some eerie... That's not a good word. There are some interesting parallels between what's happening with Daniel and the lion's den and what happened with Jesus and the cross. Are they seeking true testimony against Daniel here? Are they calling for people to come out and just tell how great he is? No, not at all. Did people watch Jesus trying to catch him in a trap? That's what they're doing with Daniel. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find, just like Jesus, but they could find no charge or fault. Why? Here's the second time you've got, at least New King James, second time you got the word because. And this is the key statement about Daniel. Why could they find no fault in him? Because he was faithful. Faithful to Belshazzar. Faithful to Darius. Faithful to God. If you're faithful to God, does that make you a different kind of leader? Does that make you a different kind of person? They looked at him and they couldn't find anything by which they could trip him up. As far as the kingdom was concerned, he was not violating any laws of the kingdom. There was nothing within the kingdom. They all, no, you're breaking the king's. They couldn't do it. Well, why? Because as a citizen, now where is he? He's in a foreign land. He's under a foreign government. You think there were some laws there that maybe he didn't like? But there was nothing they could charge him with. Here was a godly citizen in an ungodly country. It's possible, huh? For that to happen. They're looking to make these charges against him, but they couldn't. Why? Because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found. It doesn't mean he was perfect, but in regards to how he was dealing with the things of the kingdom, he was doing what the king wanted him to do. So these men in verse 5, these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel." There it is again. "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." What does that mean? We know we're not going to be able to find anything to be able to trip this guy up. But, you know, if we could figure out a way where the law of his God conflicts with the law of the land, we'd have him. How did they know that? Were they guessing? How did they know that? They'd been watching him. What'd you say, Joe? Well, they weren't going to be able to trap him any other way, so they figured out, we know this man. We know he is true to his God, so we can figure out a way for his truth, for his faithfulness to his God, verse 4, his faithfulness to his God to conflict with some law of the land, then we'll nab him because we know he won't violate the law of his God. You think anybody knows that about us? You think anybody could say that about us? No, she would never do that. Nope. He would never say that. I don't care what you say about him. If you say that's what he said, I will not believe it. I don't believe he would ever say that. Could people say that about us? If they know, the first thing we're seeing about this is he's a man of character. What do they know about his character? He's not going to go against his God, no matter what. Wonder if somebody could look at us and say the same thing. And so these governors and satraps, verse 6, thronged before the king. Can you picture? I love that word, thronged. These guys are tripping over themselves to get to the king. Oh, we got this great idea. We're going to share it with the king. We're going to get the king involved in this, and we're just going to bring Daniel down. So they said to the king Darius, long live the king, is what you have to say when you go before the king, right? Live forever, King Darius. All the governors of the kingdom, verse 7, the administration, the satraps, counselors, and advisors, they have consulted together. In other words, king, we've spent time working on this. The smartest guys in your kingdom have figured out some ideas for you. And who are you to go against the smartest guys in your kingdom spending all of this time? You've got to go along with this idea, king. You're just going to be nuts if you don't. We've consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god, little g, or man for 30 days, unless, of course, O king, they are petitioning you, of course that would be okay, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish a decree, sign the writing, so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. And that was a part of their law, is that once it was put into law, it could not be changed. Which sort of worked out pretty good with the decree of Cyrus, because when he sent them back and gave them the means by which to rebuild the city of Jerusalem, it was this kind of a law that could not be changed that he sent with him. But here's a law. He says, make this a law, king, and we know it cannot be changed. What's the law? If anyone petitions or calls upon any other god or man except for the king for 30 days, be cast in the lion's den. Why'd they come up with that? That seems kind of random. Jerry?
It sounds kind of like things we hear today coming down from our government at times when they say the vast majority of the scientists agree with us.
Yeah, right.
That
right.
So-and-so.
Right.
Or the vast majority of the people of America want this.
Right, right.
Sounds that, like That's where they were coming.
Sure, they're saying here we've taken a poll and we've come together with all of the leaders, and here's what we want to do. Why this random decree? I mean, they got all this fanfare. We've come up with this great idea. What's this great idea? For 30 days, if somebody calls upon another god, we throw them to the lions. Really? That's what you got? Now, that's why you're thronging before me. You're tripping over yourselves trying to get here to tell me that? Now, why would they come up with that idea? What do they know about Daniel? They know he prays to his God. What else do they know? He's not going to stop bowing down and praying to his God. Could we last 30 days without praying? How long could we last? You know, seriously, are there any of us who pray as much as Daniel prayed? As fervently as Daniel prayed? If they made it illegal in this country to pray, how long could you go before you just kind of gave in? They knew Daniel. They knew what he did. They knew that he was not going to change what he did. And so this plot, they were confident, was, they didn't just hope it was going to work. They knew we got him. So what did the king do in verse 9? Signed the written decree. At this point, what options does Daniel have? What options does he have? Options? He could go into seclusion. He could go into his closet and pray there, and nobody would ever know the difference. What options does he have? I can last 30 days. Are you serious? 30 days? I can go 30 days. I'll just outlast you. I'll show you. What are his options? Are any of the options that Daniel has before him, were any of them such that he was willing to compromise one iota on this? He wasn't going to change. He's not going to compromise. Verse 10. This is a key verse in this chapter. Now when Daniel knew, that's a key word, that the writing was signed. Did he go home and pray and, uh-oh, I didn't know that you signed that. I didn't even know that was a law. I didn't know I broke the law. Nobody told me that was. Oh, why didn't anybody tell me that was a law? You know, if I had known that was a law, then I would have done something. Uh-uh. He knew it had been signed. He knew it was illegal to pray to God. I wonder, are we this faithful? He knew the writing was signed. He went home. And in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, by the way, he's not showing off. He's not doing this to gain attention. This is what he does all the time. And that's what the end of the verse says. With his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day. How old are his knees? 80. 81, 82, and he gets down on his knees 3 times that day. And he prayed, and this is a petition to God, as we're going to see in the next couple verses, the word petition is used. So he is asking God for things, but he's not just asking God for things. What else is he doing? He's giving thanks. If you knew that a law was just made that made it illegal for you to pray to God, would you go and give thanks to God? That's what he's doing. He's not just asking God for things. He is giving thanks to God, as was his custom. He was a man of character at the beginning of this chapter. We now see him as a man of conviction. 3 times that day when he knew it had been made a decree, made a law, he goes and he follows the same thing that he always had done. and he prays to his God. He goes to the source of all wisdom. He goes to the source of all strength, the same way that he would, even if it wasn't illegal. Do we have that much conviction that we would do that? You know, I read a story. About a man, successful, highly successful businessman. His preacher came to visit him at work one day. I think it was his preacher. Came to visit him at work one day. And this highly successful businessman said, "Hey, can I give you a tour? I want to give you a tour of this place. I want to show you around. I want to show you my business. I want to show you what we do here." And so he took him on this tour all around everything that was going on inside of his business, all of the shops, and poked his head in different rooms and just showed him everything. And because not in a vain way, but this businessman was proud of what he was doing in his company and what he had been able to accomplish. He wasn't doing it in vain. But he said, "Do you have time? I want to show you one more room. I want to show you my power room." The preacher thought, "Hey, yeah, I want to see your power room. I mean, how do you keep this place operating? How do you keep this place running? So he takes him to this room and he opens the door, and what do you expect? What do you know he's expecting to see? I mean, here's all the electronics. Here's everything that's making this whole place run." And he opens the door, and all that's in the room is a desk, a chair, and an open Bible on top of that desk. And this successful businessman said to this preacher, "Every day when I come to work, this is the first place I go. I get down on my knees and I pray to God. And then I open my Bible and I read from God's Word so that I can find my power for today." Called it his power room. And he said, "I go there every morning to find my power for today." Y'all ever seen those little devotional books called Power for Today? That's where it got its name. It's from this guy who had a power room. Guess what we need to have? Daniel had a power room. When it says he went home, he wasn't retreating. He wasn't going home to sulk. He was going to his power room. He was going to the same place. He spent there three times every day to talk to his God and to be empowered by his God. Do we have that kind of faith? Do we have that kind of trust in God? If he knew that it had been written, did he know the consequences? Did he know what would happen to him? Obviously he did. We're going to have to move here to get through this chapter. We got 7 minutes and 10 seconds. Then these men, verse 11, assembled and found Daniel praying. Whoa, really? Yeah, they knew that's what he was going to be doing. When you play this game of hide and seek, they knew exactly what they were going to find. They knew they'd find Daniel praying, making supplication before his God. By the way, we don't have time to go back and look at it, but sometime tie 2 Kings 8 in with this passage where Solomon at the dedication of the temple talked about when God's people sin against God and fall into captivity, and if they fall down on their knees and pray to God, he will hear them and forgive them and bring them out. What's Daniel doing? Exactly what Solomon said they needed to do if they ever fell into captivity. So that's what he's doing. Verse 12, they went before the king. You can see the smiles on their faces, can't you? Spoke concerning the king's decree. First, they're going to trick the king. "Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days, except you, O king," it hadn't even been 30 minutes, hardly, "except you, O king, shall be cast into light? Didn't you make that decree?" And the king says, "Well, of course I did. The thing is true according to the law of the meat." If they had said something about Daniel in the first place, this would have been a different conversation. But what do they want him to do? First, make the affirmation, "You made that law, and it cannot be altered." Verse 13, they answered and said before the king, "That Daniel," now he's not just this Daniel, now he is that Daniel, "who is one of the captives from Judah." That is ancient history. That's 67 years ago. And who is he still? He's that captive from Judah. Interesting how sometimes things never leave us. After 67 years, that's still what he... By the way, notice that they're calling him Daniel. I find that interesting. Because wasn't he given another name? They're calling him by his Jewish name. That Daniel, who is a captive from the Jews, does not show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And this verse is intriguing. The king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased. Or what does the New American Standard say?
Distressed.
Distressed. He is deeply distressed with himself. He's not just deeply distressed. He's not greatly displeased alone. He's greatly displeased with, what did I do? He's not just upset about the situation. He's upset that he got lured into this by these no good suckers that got him to sign this decree. He's upset with himself, and he set his heart all the rest of that day on Daniel, how he might deliver him. And it says in the New King James, he labored till the going down of the sun, how he might deliver him. He kept exhausting himself. He kept exerting himself. Oh, how can I got to get Daniel? How can I get Daniel? I got to get Daniel. And he just worked himself over and over and over for the rest of the day. He respects Daniel. But at the end of the day, it was a law. And he's got, as the king, to obey that law. Has Daniel thrown into the lion's den? Verse 16, king gave the command. They brought Daniel, cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, don't you love this? He spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. See, these no good people who were seeking some kind of a charge, they knew about Daniel, that he served God continually. What does the king know? You serve your God continually. Do we have that kind of a reputation? Do people know that no matter what, we serve our God continually? So they put this 80-plus-year-old man into the den of lions, and they seal up the opening in verse 17. It cannot be opened at all. In verse 18 says, the king went into his palace, and he spent the whole night. No food, no comfort, no musicians, no sleep, no anything that would help him to have any relief during the night. He is anxious to what's going to happen. He is concerned about, you might even call him his friend. Verse 19, the king arose very early in the morning, went in haste, urgently, to the den of the lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting, grieving, troubled voice. His voice is quivering. Oh, Daniel! Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, second time, I know you're a servant of the living God, and I know you serve that God continually, has he been able to deliver you from the lions? Some of you, if you were Daniel, you would have just been quiet for a little bit and said, I'm going to pull a trick on him. I'm just not going to say anything. I'm not going to let him know. And then you're just say, that'd be some of you, because you're just tricksters. That's what some of... But Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. Can you imagine the king's heart when he heard his voice? Perhaps it was still the dark of night and he couldn't even look. But he just... Can you imagine his emotions when he hears that voice? O king, live forever. Verse 22, my God. Those are cool words. We need to say that. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me. Third time we see the word because. Why did the lions not hurt him? Because I was found innocent before capital H, him. The rest of the verse says, I have done no wrong before you, the king. I'm blameless before you as the king. But more importantly than that, I'm blameless before the king. Why did God spare Daniel? Because he was faithful, back in verse 4. Because he was innocent, blameless, before God in verse 22. And in verse 23, the king was exceedingly glad for Daniel, commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him. Fourth time we see the word because. Why was no injury found upon him? Because he trusted. He believed in his God. Does God save those people who trust in him? He did 2,500 years ago, and he does today. Saves those who truly believe and truly put their trust in him. Here's Daniel. He's different. Why? Because he had an excellent spirit in him. Because he was faithful to God. Because he was found innocent and blameless before God. And because he had placed his trust and his heart of faith in God. And so the king made a new decree in verse 26. That in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. Why? He is the living God. Remember what everybody says to the king? O king, live forever. And what does this king say? Oh, there's another king. He's living forever. He's the living God. Steadfast forever. His kingdom, not my kingdom. This is a king saying this. He doesn't say my kingdom, his kingdom. It's the one that shall not be destroyed. His dominion shall endure to the end. Why? Because he's the one who delivers. He still does that today. He's the one who rescues. And he works signs and wonders in the heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. And so Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. An amazing story, one that is probably more familiar than any other story in the Bible, or at least as familiar as any of the favorite stories in the Bible. And yet, it's exciting as a child to hear this story. But as I was reading this story again today, it's exciting to read it even when you're not a child. And to step into that lion's den with an 80-year-old man. You think Daniel was scared when they put him in that lion's den? What does he have to be scared of? Paul said, for me to live is Christ, to die is gain. Daniel gets put in this lion's den. What's the worst thing that could happen to him? He could go to heaven. He could die and go to heaven. Did those lions have an appetite?
Obviously.
Yeah. Because the guys who pulled the trick on them got thrown in there, and the Bible says before their bodies ever hit the ground inside there, they're gone. Crunched their bones. Those lions, of course, they if you hadn't had anything to eat all night, you'd be a little hungry for breakfast too. They were eager to get something to eat. So, but God stopped their life. Last thing, we're over time. Last thing. Even if God hadn't spared Daniel. Remember what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said to Nebuchadnezzar? I'm going to throw you in that fiery furnace. There's no God who can deliver you from this. And they first said, our God will deliver us. But then they second said, even if he doesn't, we're not serving you. Even if he chooses not to deliver us from this and we die, we're not going to serve you. May we have that kind of faith. It says, my God will deliver me, rescue me. Those words at the end of chapter 6. He's going to protect me. And even if he doesn't, I'm not going to compromise. I'm not going to change. I'm not going to give in just to fit in. I'm going to stay true to God. I know some of you had your hands up, and I wish I could have called on you. I'm sorry that I didn't. I wanted to try to finish the chapter and still let you all get over and get some cookies. Thank you for your good attention tonight. I will let you go right now and go get your cookies. Don't run over the kids.